I've been sitting here thinking about all the things you do for me, how you make me feel. Been wondering if it's the same for you, but when you're not around, I lose my mind, 'cause you keep it like a secret. Why won't you? Just please tell me. Hey guys, got another video for you today. Today I have a friend here, my friend Kevin Young. He does trusts, and well, first let's have Kevin. Let's talk about yourself first. Like, how did you get involved in this? And
well, hey Joe, hi everybody. Thanks for taking some time to watch this short video. We're just here to give you some more energy and some pearls maybe that could help you with your financial affairs. And I've got to know Joe. He's an amazing man. I told him that his audience, what I like about him is he's authentic and he's real. He's smart as heck, and he is willing to give so much information and doesn't ask anything for it. So I'm trying to convince him to do some of the other things. But anyway, thank you, Joe, for allowing me to spend some time with you. Real quick background, again, it's not about me, but just so you know where I come from, I'm out here in the Washington State area right now, outside of Seattle. I've been an entrepreneur since I was a very young man, and I got started in the telecom industry back in the 1900s when they divested the telecom industry under Judge Green in 1984. There was a chance for entrepreneurs to get into the long distance industry and disrupt the old guard and the big AT&Ts and GTEs of the world. And through a set of circumstances, I ended up starting a long distance phone company with a 91-year-old man, and I was 27. And we created the first local long distance prepaid phone company in the United States, and it took off. And after about a year, I had a much bigger vision, and so I ended up partnering with some financial people out of the Silicon Valley, and we created a new business called World Telecom Group. And World Telecom Group was the incubator for the industry of prepaid phone cards, which I was the founder of, and then my financing team behind me, and had no idea how big that was going to be. So if you're young, you probably don't know what that is, but we used to use cards to get around the big telcos and substantially discount the gouges that these big utility companies were sticking onto people. And so basically I'm a disruptor, and I went on to create a $1 billion company, little bit shy thereof. And I learned a lot about money, and I got to socialize with some very successful people in my endeavors, especially when I lived in New York City. I was featured in the New York Times and was on TV and met Donald Trump and all these characters. And I kept asking the same question: what is it that you do that the public doesn't do? And after they got to know me, they would say, well, if you can keep a secret, we run everything out of trusts. And I'm like, what's a trust? And they said, well, put it this way. If you use everything in your personal name and your personal bank account, you're a slave. If you operate in a private capacity in a different jurisdiction, you can do different things in business. And it all is based on trust. So that's how I started getting kind of baptized in this, Joe. And it was really based on baptism by fire, because once I started making some, decent income, like seven figures as a very young man, I was like, I'm getting my returns. And I'm saying, wait a minute, I'm the guy who created this company. I've got thousands of people either selling my product or tens of thousands using my product. The more I make, the more they take. This just doesn't seem like it makes any sense. And I didn't come from some Ivy League school or an aristocratic family. I was really just, an old athlete. I just didn't like working for corporations. And I said, screw it, I'm going to go out and do my own thing. And I started learning about money. And then somebody gave me a book called Creature from Jekyll Island way back when. I learned about the Federal Reserve, and I was scratching my head saying, how come people don't know this? This is back in the 1980s and 90s. And then I got to know G. Edward Griffin personally, and then he opened up my mind. And then I socialized with people who invented the cell phone, like the McCaw family, the people who founded Costco. These are people that are worth, billions, if not more than that. On the private side, it's way, way more than that. And they just kept telling me, as long as I could keep a secret, they're more than happy to share certain information. So here I am giving away the secret. Go figure.
Well, paid your dues on it, though, right?
Yes, I did. Absolutely. Yep.
All right. So this trust, this is basically like some kind of contract that gets you out of the public and into the private.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the term trust because it's thrown around out there, and you've got a big network of people who and I read your stuff and I watch your videos, and there's always, hey, can I set up a trust or this and that? So the information is out there. It's just scattered like a constellation of stars. It's not really brought down into the universe where it's palatable. People talk about irrevocable and revocable and private and public and statutory. So I like to call, well, first off, a trust is everything. Just so you know, United States corporation that we know it is a trust, right? The name that you're using, which isn't you, that is registered with the state as a product and as an organization, is a public Roman trust. Your private account that you may or may not know that you have that's sitting over there in the Vatican, which is called the Ceste Cave Trust, is a trust. It's holding an asset in responsibility for the benefit of the beneficiary. So a trust, believe it or not, I hate to do this because that's not what it is, but it's a, you have three laws to the trust. You have a grantor, you have a trustee, and then you have a beneficiary. So it's as simple as going into a grocery store and creating a trust. And so when you walk in, you buy groceries, they're trusting that you're going to pay for them. You put them in the basket, which is to collect your assets. You go to the front, and now you're in a trust contract. And the contract is the SKU and the number on that particular item or that asset. You're responsible for some type of an exchange, right? Which would be, Federal Reserve notes or whatever that is. And then the trustee is the cash register or the registry, and then you are the beneficiary of the assets. And so that is a trust that's started and granted, it's created, it's executed, and it's collapsed. So as soon as you get that bag of groceries, you have collapsed the trust and it's over. That's a contract, right? You didn't need the permission of the state to actually go into contract with the grocery store. The unforeseen issue is that you're using a state name, which is that all caps name, as a party to a trust contract of the state in a statutory jurisdiction. So a trust is a bankruptcy. Okay. You may not know that, but if you've ever filed a 7 or an 11 or a 13, I'm sorry, these are all indentured trusts. And I've been through some of those things for my businesses for certain reasons, of course, because it's called, you didn't know things. But every one of those bankruptcies is a new trust and it has a trustee. And then when it is satisfied and all of the reconciliation is completed, then that trust is collapsed. So here you go, Joe. Is the United States Corporation in bankruptcy?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so is it a trust?
Yeah, oh yeah. It says so right on their Federal Reserve notes.
That's right. So who's the trustee and who's the beneficiary?
Well, now that's a good question.
Okay.
My assumption would be that we are the beneficiaries and they are the trustee.
Correct. But who ends up being the trustee in most cases, and who ends up being the beneficiary?
Right, it's a role reversal. We end up
Right.
being the trustee and they're the beneficiaries.
And so how do they get away with that, generally speaking?
Well, just a lack of understanding how the system works.
Exactly, right? So lack of knowledge gives them an advantage. And so when a individual is misrepresenting themselves as a human being, thinking that they're a name when they're actually a beneficiary of a business that's set up as a trust, they are tricked because statutes essentially is like the Matrix, right? So when we talk about the Matrix, as funky as it is, the corporation is the Matrix itself, and the statutes creates the code that is always trickling down past us. And so the only ones that generally know the code are the authorities trained in statutory administrative law, and those are the attorneys and the judges and the accountants and the lawyers. And they are speaking a foreign language, which is trust language. But again, that's a statutory jurisdiction. And it's very important for people to know this because trust law is at the beginning of your birth. And so the contract that you failed to represent correctly was your birth certificate, which is a trust. So the reason the United States continues to operate under bankruptcy is because it's a business model. Isn't it ironic that the last president's efficiency and his training at the Wharton School of Business was trust law and bankruptcy?
I did not know that.
Most people don't. When I was living back east where Joe lives in New York and around, I did some business in New Jersey and I got into some interesting networks, to say the least. And there was a casino that was owned by that gentleman at one time. And that casino ultimately was bankrupted. But the people that were attracted to that, quote, deal were trapped in that deal when bankruptcy happened. And so they were essentially looking as investors, but because they were already on the books as participating in a company, that charter under bankruptcy was able to essentially trap the bees that were coming for the honey. So if you're smart, or bad word, if you're competent in bankruptcy law and trust law, you have a huge distinct advantage over the general, you know, competitor world out there. And the competitors, you know, is just commerce, right? It's actually, it's the public. The public is your competition, because if you have a competitive advantage, or let's say an unfair competitive advantage, because you know trust law and bankruptcy law, and then you listen to Joe's videos, I mean, you're going to be like a king or a queen. It's a huge benefit. Had I known this going into my business ventures, you know, it would have been even more exciting. But I was operating from a very shallow end of the pool, like most of us do, because I went to public school where I was trained to be a dumbass.
Sure. So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're right. Then that's one of the issues with public school for sure. So, so now, like, if you like, so like a common guy, let's say he's not a business guy. He just, you know, has a house, a car, a family. How does this help him?
That's a great question. So that's who I really want to reach. And that's who you and I want to reach, right? Is the everyday individual that's been kept from the secrets of the commercial world. And you're not kept from it. You're just sidetracked, or you're distracted. I mean, you're either sitting on the couch watching a basketball game, or you're listening to an attorney, or you're getting advice from a financial advisor. All of these public officials and agents and representatives are teaching you about what is not really the correct way to do business so that they can keep you paying the fees. The average individual, and let's just use a better term, the unaware, awesome individual who has all the potential in the world to live in abundance and free of tyranny and risk, if they can take the time to nurture their brain and their mind to get it right, the correction that we talk about, like with Brandon, with you, with people I've been associating with for 30 plus years that you may not even know anymore that are old school. An asset is not yours when you created it in the name of the state. You have a party to it. You're a participant in an agreement, but again, it's when I say not yours, you cannot own anything in the life form, because when you die, all those assets don't go with you. Last I checked, you can't carry a house inside of your, you know, grave. So, and this is an old saying, whether you've heard it or not, is, and I don't like referencing the old banker people because they're part of the problem, but own nothing and control everything, right? Own nothing. Well, ownership is a maritime term to keep you on the sea, lost at sea, and essentially you're on the Pirates of the Caribbean being used summarily as cargo. So when you learn that you're not supposed to be on that ship of fools and that you can essentially abandon ship and cut the cord and leave the water and head back to the land, when you need to start discerning what it means to actually control assets. And so the private trust is kind of like a catcher's mitt for those assets that you've accumulated in your public endeavors as you've moved forward in your life. And let's go down those things, okay? A bank account that has cash in it. Yeah, we know those are the Federal Reserve notes. We know that they're liabilities. We know that they're promises to pay, but they're actually assets. Gold, silver, houses, motorcycles, boats, second homes. Did you know that a UCC lien is an asset, right? If you create the lien and it's recorded under the controlling dignitaries of the trust, and it has a lien on an asset, that's an asset, right? So, the point is that everything that you think you are in control of in the public with that public name is truly a liability in the reality of it, because if there's a claim ever filed on that name in the statutory world, you're going to be subject to having to actually prove that you are the controlling party of interest in that. And the public trust has an advantage over your ignorance. So you need to really distinguish two things. And if you, I'll stop talking here in a second, but I was just going to say, an everyday man or woman or husband or wife or couple or whoever needs to know that there's two jurisdictions in a parallel universe going on here. You have statutory, which means state created, corporates created, administrative, uniform commercial code, Roman law, blah, blah, blah. That's the statutes that you're operating under in the legal system called the Matrix. Two is, oh, I did say that. Two is the non-statutory. I'm sorry, that's the first one. The second one is the non-statutory jurisdiction, which is common law, which can be actually, there can be an argument against that. I would call this, in the purest sense, a pure trust is of divine law, right? Of God. God said, don't do harm, don't steal, reciprocate, do good justice, help people. That's the original law and the commandments of being a good human being. Use your moral compass to actually build trust. Man got involved and said, screw that. We'll take over and we're going to impugn the public and we're going to create a matrix of systems that we can create slaves out of these people and create a paper trade, which is based on the birth certificate. So if you understand the difference between the jurisdictions of statutory versus non-statutory, and that you can operate in the private means non-statutory. When you establish a trust as a grantor, you can willfully and legally and lawfully essentially cut the cord of these assets that you have adhesion contracts to, and you can move them over into this private trust, and you're going to irrevocably essentially discharge yourself from ever owning those things again. And that's what irrevocable means. So a private, irrevocable, non-statutory trust is kind of like the Ferrari of trust when it comes to this species of operation. A species means like a particular kind of, right? So a bird is a bird, but an eagle is a different species than a chicken. In the public, people are chickens. In the private, people are operating like eagles. They build this trust at the top of their tree. They're out of the public view and they can see all their prey, and everything's done in private. So once you transfer, Joe, and you deed, and you can collateralize that trust, now those assets are gone, and you're now going to operate those as the trustee or as the beneficiary.
Okay, so basically what this does is that it just removes you from the liability of ownership of these things.
That's
Right.
probably phase one. Yeah, that's way easier to say it than what I just said, but yes.
Well, just summarizing. All right, so that's cool. And then, but now, see, a lot of people go, "Well, I want to own my stuff because I want to have control over my belongings and this." Do you still keep control over this property?
Great question. So when you have your assets in that public name, you don't have any control. They're all seizable. You can have judgments, bankruptcies, claims, lawsuits, prison, jail. I mean, you don't own jack shit when you're using that public name. You're a party to a contract that has value in the sense that you can convey and you can also benefit by profiting, but you're going to have a liability called tax because that tax is associated with that all caps name. Now, if a let's just say that there's a certain wealthy class of people out there, and I could name names, but there's no reason to. Why do they all operate out of trust that and they don't have their own personal bank accounts and they don't use their name on any transactions? I mean, why do they do that?
Well, I guess because we're going back to the liability issue, they don't have any liability.
They don't own anything. You don't
So,
own
like,
anything.
if the government comes knocking on their door saying, "Hey, we're taking all your property because you owe this or that or whatever," they
You
don't
say, like,
have
what property?
any.
I mean, people ask me, what do? I'm like, I am a humanitarian. I work for a private estate. I work on behalf of the future benefit of the beneficiaries. and I take care of the asset base of that particular private trust. And I'm involved in all kinds of things, you know, as hobbies, investing, real estate, cars, travel, you know, sailboats, scuba diving. Well, how do you afford to do that? Well, I get an allowance. I don't make any money. I don't have any money. I don't want their money because their money is private. So let's talk about that for one second. The Federal Reserve note, which is the dollar bill, I wonder if I have one here. I bet I have one or two, maybe. Let's see, maybe I don't. I got a whole bunch of them, actually. Let's pull out, who's this here? This guy.
Oh,
Okay.
yeah.
So these are, as you would call them, and we should call them, right? They're used for exchanges, right? They're bills of exchange. This is a private property. This is held by a trust called the Federal Reserve. Federal Reserve owns this property. This is called scrip. Okay. I didn't create it. The United States, the your government didn't create it. A private bank created it, and they put it in trust as one of their assets, which is intellectual property. Okay. And that intellectual property actually has a covenant under trust law inside of the contract to only really use those. The board of directors are the only ones that you're supposed to use Federal Reserve notes for exchanges, but somehow it got out to the public as a unit for people to use as a way of exchanging value. So think about that $20 bill as a trust. Okay, but it's not yours, it's not mine. And because you're using private property in the public name and it's been leased more or less under a contract to the Treasury, which is also a private corporation, that product has a tariff associated with its use. That's called tax. So you're not just being taxed because you're not aware. You're just being taxed because you're using a private property as a bill of exchange that was created by a private trust called the Federal Reserve, which is on contract with the Treasury, which is a private corporation of the federal corporation. And so this is all indentured servitude. It's basically servitude to the fact that people are unaware that they're using all this private property for their own personal commercial use, but you're paying a fee for the privilege of using it versus having rights that we normally would be associated with common law.
Right. Wow. That's an excellent breakdown of the money. I love that.
Yeah, money is who, okay. I came to the realization of this one day. I got a cat. Come on here, cat. Come here, trust. Come here, trusty.
Your cat's name is Trusty.
I think I'm going to rename it Trustee. Yeah. It wants to be the beneficiary of all my efforts. So we are the money when you really think about it, because we're the ones that create the energy, right? So we have been given that at our birth. The birthright was the right to have abundance. And so if you are the money, you have to monetize yourself. And it's not about how much money you earn, because that's not money. Those are promises and notes of exchange that have liabilities attached to them on a certain side of the ledger. There's a reason that Jesus died on the cross. And that's a metaphor, by the way. So if you ever take accounting, there's a line in the middle, and then there's a cross. One side is debit, one side is credit. He died on the cross for which side of the cross? For the debtor, because debt's a sin. So he died for your sin, not knowing that you were actually operating in a commercial capacity that is unlawful. And so you got to really think about this, is that we're talking about business almost from the beginning of whatever your religious belief is. The people that are running this show, their religion is money.
Oh,
It
yeah,
has nothing to
believe
do with
that.
the afterlife. It's the life here on right now, right? So the life of business is that you and I are the money. And so they're going to monetize you in every step that they can. And they're getting away with it with a lot of people, but there's a ton of people that are waking up thanks to you and to a lot of people who, you know. So the truth is hiding in plain sight, but it's, again, it goes back to trust law and money.
Okay, so now, all right. So we understand that using this money, we have this liability. We have to pay a fee for using it, which is the taxes. Now, my understanding is that when you have a trust, the trust does have to has a tax liability itself, right? So if I were to donate my entire salary to a trust, wouldn't that trust now have the tax liability?
Great question. So now there's different species of making money in the public, right? So a salary, you're a W-2, okay, a W-2 wage earner. And we're going to get into a deep category, and I don't want to go too deep because taxation, again, I just want everybody to know I'm not an attorney. I'm not a CPA. I'm not an accountant. This is for entertainment purposes only, I promise you. I wasn't trained to be any of those individuals, but I would say that I know what I'm talking about. And when you are earning money in the public and you're transferring it to the private, you have an obligation for what you're still liable for. And I'll give you a case study. So a W-2 wage earner, Joe, somebody's got a job. I don't care if you're a Boeing employee or if you work at a, a farm, if you are a teacher, you're going to get a paycheck, okay? And then in most cases, you don't know this, but you don't have to have them, you don't have to have them take out your federal or your state income tax. You can actually go back to your Department of Human Resources, go figure, and say, hey, please stop withholding my taxes. I'm a grown up now. I can handle my own affairs. So, and there's some forms that we can share with you that Joe will have that you can go back and do that. And then you're going to get the majority of your paycheck. But if there's a private trust over here that you're controlling, you can take that paycheck and you can donate that check, 100% of it, to that trust because it accepts the liability. It's not exempted, it's accepting it. Okay. So I'll take on that responsibility of that tax liability, but because it's a non-statutory estate, it's going to go into cold storage and it's going to be deferred. Okay, it's called sheltering. You're not going to talk to an accountant, they're not going to talk about shelters. We're going to talk about deductions, right? So when you shelter taxes, that means that it's sitting over here. But as that public individual with that W-2 in your all caps name, you still have an obligation to pay a certain tax. Well, what would that be? Under the other administrative, whoever was the president of the corporation before this current one, you could deduct 100% of your donation if you gave it to a charitable organization. So whether you gave it to XYZ, charity trust or whatever that is, you can deduct 100%. Now, as of 2022, you can deduct 60%. So let's say you're making 100,000, you live in New York, you're paying state and federal income tax, and you're going to pay, let's say, $44,000 of that with no deductions in tax liability. Okay. So if you donated that whole paycheck to a trust and it's, again, it's sheltering it, you're going to be liable for what's 60% of 44,000? You're looking at about what, 12,000? Something like that.
Yeah, probably about that, yeah.
Okay. So you're still going to be liable for $12,000 of that tax liability, and you have to file taxes on the public side for your own W-2 situation. Now, okay, there are other things you can do to get that 60% to 100, and that's called, business. Because there's a contract that you, as the public person, can have with the private trust to do certain things that you write a contract for. And now you can essentially abort that concept of having to pay any taxes in that personal name because you can account for it. Now, as the fiduciary of the private trust, you do have to write a receipt every month. You're going to keep a record, not for the trust, but for the public side. And then you're going to provide, what you deposited, the date of the deposit, you're going to put the name of the trust and the EIN number, and then you're going to sign it in the signature with a slash and TTEE representing yourself as the trustee so that when you do file your tax returns on the public side, you have a record of what you donated. So that's a good question. Now, that's an individual W-2 wage earner. Okay.
Right.
Not everything has to be donated, by the way. A trust in this particular capacity is more than a charitable organization, also acts as a business entity, so it can accept payments. So if you have a business and you're currently using a franchise of a state corporation from Texas or California or Washington or New Jersey, you don't have to use a C corp or an S corp or an LLC. You can actually use this trust entity as a vessel to do business, and it can accept payments because it does not file tax returns. And I'm not going to say that three times, but I'll say it twice. It does not file tax returns. And why is that? Well, first off, it's a different jurisdiction. Secondly, is it's not issued by the state. This is not a 501c3. This is not a 508c1a. It is not a statutory entity that has a cascading book of statutes that actually are needing to be represented when dealing with, you know, that. So you just have to be, you know, you got to pick your battles and be very intelligent. This is not evading taxes. That's the last thing people should do. They should avoid the consequence of being ignorant and operate correctly as, you know, private bankers. I mean, everybody is a private banker anyway. They're just acting as if they're not because they spend all their time not actually researching who the hell they are. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Like, where are you in this construct of bullshit? So, you know, hopefully this is going to wake some people up because, yeah, you're going to have to get your head wrapped around some of this, but it's as easy as setting up this trust, getting all your stuff moved over, putting a bank account up so that you have a way to do some accounting and using those petty funds to pay your expenses. But in the shallow end of the pool, the benefit is you're removing liability and you're sheltering your taxes. And how many people right now could use another 30 or 40% boost in their income to keep up with the stupid thing that's going on in the public? Everybody.
Oh, yeah. All right. So we got this. You're avoiding certain taxes by donating your whatever percentage of income you want to donate. You still maintain control over this, but you don't have any of the liability of ownership over any of this property.
Correct.
These assets.
Yep. And if you're a 1099, Joe, right, where you're not filing a W-2, you can just have changed the name of the beneficiary of the paycheck from your name to the trust name and to the social security number to the EIN. And now there's no tax consequence because it goes directly into the trust.
Nice. That's pretty awesome. So now the question is, like, if I were to go on, like, I know, you know, I show people how to get the 98 EIN, which is not what you guys do, right?
No, I mean, again, it's, you can do your own research. I would just say, a 98 EIN is a foreign EIN number. And I will tell you that if you really do not live in another continent or in a different country, so to speak, or company, they're going to come and check up on that. So there are ways to get addresses and what have you, but I will tell you, I work with some people all over the world, and I know people in Panama. I know the people that set up the original trust for most all these people you see in Congress. All these politicians are operating in a specific way. They do have a set of rules that's different than the public because that's what we're talking about. So I'm not saying that what you're suggesting isn't correct or true or right. I'm just saying, no, I don't move people in that direction only because you don't need to. And you're already a foreigner by living in a different jurisdiction than Washington, D.C. The EIN number is not the trust. It is an irrevocable designation. And I'm here to tell you that the IRS is actually an ally if you know how to operate with it correctly, not them, because them is not them. It's an it. It's a business. Right. So it has to issue an EIN number to give the trust, the private trust, the constitutional authority to actually be able to do commerce. So there's a little bit of a gray area here because, and there'll be people who want to try to challenge me on this. I really don't care. If you've heard of a 508c1a, that's actually a church, right? It's a corporation issued by the state. It goes back to, it's a Massachusetts type of trust, so to speak.
Okay.
It does not file tax returns. Okay. It has an EIN number, but you have to get that from the state. It's a state issued property. So it's a private property of a state franchise. However, that quote church, because what is a church? I mean, do you have to be a Christian to have a church? No. I mean, is like talking to cats a church? Yeah. I mean, depends on how you want to style your conversation. But the point is that this trust is undefinable from the statutes because it has ecclesiastical roots that go back for a long, just, you know, centuries. So in the fact that it's under divine law and ecclesiastical law, it's somewhat in a gray area. So when the EIN is issued, it falls between that 501c3 and the, so I call it the fives, right? If you just look at the category of the fives, and Joe, you're really good at looking up all of the, you know, the date or the specific data so that people can go in and do their own, you know, data research. But that EIN number is an irrevocable EIN number, and it's not the trust. The trust is a separate contract. The EIN number is for banking and accounting, but it does represent the fact that its status is not a non-reporting entity.
Okay, so technically, I could set up a trust for, let's say, my house without ever getting an EIN number or using one.
Correct. Yep. In
Okay.
fact, in many cases, when depending on the sophistication of somebody's estate, how many things they have or what have you, I always suggest, you know, play this game like a Russian doll. Right? What's a Russian doll?
Oop, the
Well,
little inside, yeah.
one, and then there's another one, and then there's another one. And so there's an onion effect, right? Sophisticated estate planning is when you're truly operating from a place of knowledge and you get that this is a game, like literally a business game. And those with the least amount of knowledge are the taxed the most and pay the biggest penalties. So, what was I talking about?
The Russian
Sorry, I had a
dolls.
phone call. Yeah, the Russian dolls. So if you have houses, airplanes, you know, second homes, in many cases, you may want to have trust for some of those assets that are individualized just for that asset. So the living trust, the reason I call it a living trust is because when you're alive, you're living out the virtues of the trust because you get a benefit from the estate and all of its, you know, assets and all of its liquidity because it's going to give you access to those things. When you have a home, for example, because that's usually somebody's primary investment, you may want to put that in its own China doll or its own Russian doll. And it doesn't have to have a bank account, but you can name that trust the address of the trust. Okay. And then that would be an asset of your primary trust. So trust one has trust two. Trust two happens to be, you know, this, and it has a home in it. And the name of that trust is 125 Lake Avenue West Trust. Why would you want to do that? Well, you're separating the big guns from the soft goods, right? Cash, crypto, gold, silver, stocks, bonds. Those are things that don't create controversy. Tripping on your front porch creates controversy because I can go back and talk to my lawyer, and then that lawyer is going to go to the public, and then he or she's going to look up and say, "Oh, Joe Lestica owns that house. See, oh, Joe has a car. He's got a second home. He's got this. Oh, Joe is a treasure chest for us. Let's go slap a lawsuit on Joe." And Joe's like, "Oh gosh, I got to hire an attorney. What stuff's going to get taken?" Well, Joe, if you had the trust out of your name and you deeded it to trust two, and trust one was the principal holder on title in the county recorder's office, you've just distanced yourself from two steps of discovery. And at that point, if you're even more intelligent, which you are, you're probably going to put a commercial lien on from the first trust onto this asset on the second trust for more than, let's say, 10 or 20% for the equity of that property, which makes it unobtainium, which is a new mineral that is talked about in the estate planning world, which means you can't get your hands on it.
Right.
These things are very hard to penetrate, put it that way. So the deeper you go, when you start to layer these assets, I mean, I have people that have airplanes and RVs and expensive cars. Each one of them is in their own trust module, so to speak, hanging down below this apple tree that is the oak that, you know, kind of keeps the basis of it.
Okay, so you got this one trust, and then you have all these little trusts underneath it that are inside of that one trust. That's pretty
You
wild.
could say that, yeah. So, you know, Mama Bear is responsible for, you know, the offspring. So this is called the child parent, you know, model.
Okay.
And this is very much like data. So, but Mama Bear is also going to cover the expenses of all these other offspring. So if there's a mortgage, or if there's utility bills, or if there's fuel, or there's a car, you know, this particular trust is going to be the repository for the disbursements of all the expenses of that estate. And so you, as the fiduciary, are responsible to make sure that the trust does that correctly.
Okay. Now, but let's say, okay, I'm still making payments on my home. I'm still making payments on my car. I can't do that until I pay all that stuff off, right?
No, that's a good question. So you got those obligations under your public name, correct? Yes.
Let's just say yes. That's not really
Let's
my
say, let,
situation, but let's just say.
okay, let's say a house. Okay, so a house, in today's world, we go to a bank and we get a fake loan, even though I hate to say that, but yeah, you get a loan in your all caps name,
A
right?
fake
Because you
one.
created a credit score and you've got income and you can get this rating, which gives you the authenticity to be able to borrow from yourself. And then you create a note. So that note is a first lien position held by a bank-ish type thing. And then there's a deed. So the deed is held also in your name. So you really can bifurcate those two instruments and you can deed over the property so that the trust is on title, but you're not going to be able to change that obligation in the public, but you're going to put the responsibility for the payment to the trust so that the trust makes the mortgage payment. So what does all this really mean? It means you need to get out of the business of using your name to sign all these contracts. Let the trust be the fluid fund so that it covers all the expenses of the trustee. It was a past, it was an event that occurred before the trust, right? BT, before trust. But the trust assumes the liability because you're the trustee and it pays that. So when it comes to a car, I have a whole different perspective on automobiles, and you've done a great job of explaining, titles and notes and, Department of Transportation registration and all that, original certificate of origin. So without getting down those weeds, I can just tell you that cars are just kind of dangerous because they go around and create controversy. You're one text away from a head-on collision. I mean, literally.
Oh,
And
yeah.
so, what I often educate people on is you can have a car. You may want to transfer it to like an LLC in a different state, like Montana, where there's no sales tax if you own it. But you would set up that LLC from the name of the trust. So the trust is actually going to establish that statutory entity. And then the LLC is going to buy that car without sales tax. Then the trust is going to own that LLC. Your name's not on anything at that point. And then you're also going to put a lien on that car from the trust for more than 10 or 20% of the value of the automobile. And then, like based on Joe's advice, you're going to go get a bond and you're going to self-insure that automobile. So you're literally, traveling around an automobile that is registered with an LLC owned by a private trust that is self-insured with a bond from a public Sesta Cave Roman trust, and you have no part of it. Ta-da.
Wow, that's pretty awesome.
So we have a here's another story, and I won't mention their name. They're really cool guys. They build these badass airplanes called Bushliners, and they're all trustees now. The three of them are Boeing guys that left, and they're just too smart to be working for the man. So they're like recreating these old Cessnas and turning them into like Hummers in the air. You can land on like gravel in Alaska, and you can land on icebergs, and has skis, wheels, big tires, float planes. Anyway, you can buy that airplane as an airplane, or you can buy the trust that has an airplane in it. So if I want to be a private pilot, I can just say, hey, I'd like to get that L4177A trust, which happens to be the tail number of that aircraft. That's the name of the trust. Then the trustee steps off of that trust, and the buyer of that trust steps on as a successor trustee. There's no transfer fees. It's a private exchange. There's no sales tax, nothing. And now you
Wow.
have a private aircraft that's actually a trust.
Okay, so now that made me think about this. Like, let's say you own a house, you have a really nice house, and you're gonna go soon, and you're like, what do I do with my house? Even let's say it's in a trust, what happens once you pass away? What happens to that property?
Super question. So this is because it's a private trust, it avoids probate. All of this stuff goes back to that all caps name being a you're an accoutrement to a public contract, right? Dumb word, but you're a thing, right? So when you have this private trust established and you deeded the property, whatever is in that trust when you die is now going to be the estate for either the beneficiary or the successor trustee. you as the master of your own kingdom, as the king of your own kingdom or queen, you get to decide all of these events in advance of your demise. And so you are more or less creating a will and testament by having this private contract, which is like a private membership to a private trust. And if you've deeded and willed and pledged or sold assets that you were, quote, owning at one time, now controlling over here, that is your success plan. That's why these certain families have generational wealth, because there's no event that, or consequence of tax or the government getting in the middle of your death, because there is no death. The trust lives on into perpetuity. And so it rolls over and rolls over and rolls over. So there is a need to kind of like educate your successor trustees and your beneficiaries as to what you're doing in private. And they're part of that business plan. And so when the successor trustee assumes the responsibility, if you died or you just want to stop actually being the trustee, then you're going to have a document based on a minute that's kept in the notes of the trust as what happens upon that. And so then you're going to take that individual down to the bank as well, put them on record, and it's going to be a notarized document as an addendum, so that the governing body of that trust has given the authority to the successor trustee to assume the responsibility of its finances. So the bank's going to hand the keys over to that successor trustee.
Oh, okay. Wow. Well, that's a lot easier than dealing with probate.
Yeah, probate goes away. I mean, shelter taxes, you know, eliminate risk, avoid probate, accept payments, accept donations, don't file tax returns. Why would anybody not do this? Because they live in fear. I'm going to go to prison. No, you're in prison. You're currently in prison. You're just walking around free, you think.
I hear people say that all the time. They're like, oh, I'm going to go to jail if I do that. I'm like, am I in jail? They're like, whoa, I mean, no.
Well, if you live in fear and you need to have the government tell you what to do, this whole kind of conversation is not for you. I mean, it's like, we don't need to convince anybody that you need to take a stand on your knowledge and recreate your life. And, you know, I just want this country to get its ass back in gear, and people need to take control of their own world. This is self-governing. This is what it was all about from the beginning. Like 80% of Americans in 1921 were all entrepreneurs or farmers. Now it's like 90% are all corporate people that have jobs that know nothing about business or know nothing about trust, or, you know, and it wasn't their fault, because they were educated from a system that had that already designed into its program. I mean, we're living in a fictional world, right? So this simulation was designed on deceiving people from their true identity and what their power is. So that takes about 100 years to get it done. It's been done. Now you have this wallowing group of people out there going, well, this must be the way it is because I heard it on the news. Well, come on. Yeah, there is no such thing as news. It's called programming.
That's right. Yeah. What's the program on TV today?
How about to your regular programming?
Yeah, they're very upfront about that. Oh, yeah, you're getting programmed. We're programming you. So I haven't actually watched TV in about 26 years.
No wonder you're so smart. Yeah, me too. I stopped in 2007, 8-ish. Kind of divorce time for me, but I just cut out a lot of that stuff, and I'm like, man, I detoxed, and I'm like a whole different individual, because there's nothing that comes good out of watching the program. Isn't it funny how these TVs at Costco now are like 100 inches, and they're this thin, and they cost like $800?
Oh, yeah.
Everything's going up in price but the TVs?
Yeah, it's funny. I was at a Walmart, and I saw a TV that was, I don't know, probably about, maybe a 3-foot long television. It was like $300. I was like, holy crap, I could buy that thing right now. It's like, it'd be the biggest TV I have ever owned, and it'd be one of the cheapest ones I've ever bought. But
yeah, that's called planned obsolescence, which is what technology is too, right? So the people who are feeding these consumer items are literally consuming us, because they know that what they're handing us are the tools of the trade, which is to get you to do what they want and to pull your energy and your data from your source. And I'm in IT, right? I'm in internet technology or information technology for years. And I've watched this entire system grow and metastasize. The very people that you're buying computers from are the very people that are enslaving you. They're building all this stuff into the infrastructure of the system. And so one thing I would like to just try to recommend for everybody, we're talking about the private world. Your public information, when you're using these things, your computers and all that, that's as private as, you need to like get that shit together because you have no idea. When you think, oh, I'm not doing anything wrong, it's not about doing anything wrong. It's about like literally letting somebody sleep with you. Know what your breath smells like, know what you're shampooing, know where you drive, and all of your documents. I mean, if you're using anything free on the internet, Gmail, Dropbox, Hot, any of that stuff, anything free, it's costing you a fortune. And, again, a lot of people don't have a whole lot of resources, but I'm just telling you, in the cybersecurity business, I see every day what's going on, and you would be shocked. You probably wouldn't ever want to use your stuff again. So, part of your job at some point would be to kind of really stop and pay attention to your digital communications because this is going to be the ultimate slave shackle right here. And they're working on it,
Oh, the
as you
electronic
know.
leashes, that's what I call them. Electronic leash.
I still have, I have my original phones from 1987. I bought my first cell phone from Macaw Cellular at like $1,200, and it was the size of a shoebox. And I had to look cool because I was in the telecom world, right? And I still have my same phone number from them. And every call would drop within a minute, and I had to pay for those. But I've kept almost every one of those phones as I've gone through the years. And when I go down to AT&T to like upgrade my service, the kid will be like, oh, wow, Kevin, I wasn't even born yet when you got your first phone number. I mean, I'm like, yeah, I mean, time travels, but it is, yeah, these are really quickly. And then you, whatever you want to ask, people talk about the mark of the beast, right? Is the phone the mark of the beast? Is it the jab? Is it, it's your name. And so the name that you're using really is the easiest way to capture your true essence because it's a trademark. It's a business entity and you don't know it. And so you're literally operating in a beast system, which has been there to control and to govern or govern you away from source, which is God and divine law. And I just want people to realize that you don't have to abandon that name, but you just don't want to use it to enrich those that are misusing it. And it's unjust enrichment for those that do nothing. So, if you want to cut off the blood supply to the beast system, you need to start doing things like what we're talking about and become competent. Shut off the TV and spend another 4 hours watching Joe's videos and Brandon's videos. And, I don't do this like Joe does, but I wanted to come on here with him because his people are so real and they are just starving for the truth in these in this fictional world. It's very it's a challenge. So, I hope this is helping.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I mean, I think you answered my questions, but if anyone has any questions, definitely comment below, like whatever questions you may have, or if you want to get in touch with Kevin, and because he does do these trusts, he sets them up for people, just email me. I'll send you his information.
And let, yeah, before you go there, so let me just say that. So, there are some donations required to do all this work because it's a ton of work and there's a lot of coaching and a lot of babysitting. But I will say that this is the one time that there's really a product that I can offer that doesn't cost anything. And when I say that is because, and I study money and ledgers and accounting and all that. And when I got in the phone business, people were like, how can you provide a service for half price? And like, I can still talk to people. I'm like, well, I don't have to pay for collections. That's prepaid, right? And I cut off all the meat and all the fat, I mean, in that model. And I was able to pass the savings on to the customer. It was really simple. It was just the technology was complicated. But there are people that will spend $100,000, $200,000 who are, seven income earners or way above for a structure similar to this all day long. I've been recruited by those estate planning companies to do that, and they'll generally price a trust according to your revenue or to your estate size, which I think is a little bit, I don't know, just because you have more, can you charge you more for the same thing? Well, if you're making $50,000, $60,000 or more in the public name, and you're like living in New Jersey or New York, you're paying a state and federal income tax. So again, you're not avoiding taxes, you're evading them. You're avoiding them by sheltering them, right? So you're going to make a donation for this trust, but you're going to be taking money that you would be spending on the war machine, and you're going to be reallocating it towards the donation to get this trust built. Once it's done, it's done. There's no like fees or all that stuff that's associated with attorneys, right? They're going to come back and nick you every month or every year. This is a one and done. But I can show you, like, hey, I'll trade you a $10,000 donation for your $40,000 tax liability. Okay.
That's
So I'm going to make your 40 now down to 10, and you can keep the 30. Next year it's going to be 40. So it's, you have to kind of like know how money works, right? To really to see. So I go through that with people, and then I don't advertise, and there are other people doing elements of this. I don't want anybody to think that I'm selling them. I just want people to have these trusts in place. And so there is a educational process. This is a great one. I have a Zoom meeting that I do with Joe, and it's to help unpack the bullshit and then repack how this works. It takes about 35, 40 minutes. I have documents that I can send people that they can do their own research. You know, if you want to go on the internet and get lost in the world of BS, go for it. I mean, the internet's not the same anymore. It's just one big application, and it's just not necessarily giving you all the facts, but you can do that. And then we have what's called a, well, I have a an automated video you can watch. You can share it with people. That's about 20, 25 minutes. So we can load you up with due diligence, and I have trust writers, and lots of this is education and then hand holding to get you across the goal line, help you set up your bank account and start transferring the assets and get a new set of behaviors, because the behaviors you've got right now is what's put you where you are. So we can help you, change that. And that's just personal development. So there's just some ideas. So get a hold of Joe, and then Joe will get a hold of me. And I hope to be able to bless people with this. And I'm just grateful to meet you, Joe, a while back and be on here. Thank you for and all your great friends and people that follow you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. Got some a lot of really good info there, so I'm glad I was able to get you to share it here.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
All right, guys, so I think that's it. I'll see you in the next video. Peace.